Hello, and welcome to the CISC podcast. In each edition of this series, you'll have the chance to meet a CISC staff member or other educational professional involved with the CISC community. We think you will find these podcasts of great value as a variety of people share their unique insights in their respective fields. Now, please enjoy this edition of the podcast as our host, Bob Kretzmer, speaks with our guest.
The Kern County Network for Children serves 253,000 youth, or 29% of the population of Kern County. Tom Corson, the executive director, has been associated with the network since 1993. His inspiring leadership is reflected in this conversation I had with him on January 21st, 2022. After listening to this podcast, if you would like to make a donation to the network, please do so by dropping by the Dream Center located at 1801 19th Street, Bakersfield, California. We hope you enjoy this conversation I had with Tom Corson. Tom, thanks you for being with us today. It's a pleasure to speak with you and get an opportunity to talk in detail about the Kern County Network for Children. So I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Bob, for having me.
Tom, can you tell me a little bit about your background and your role with the Kern County Network for Children?
Yeah. Well, I've been in the business of trying to enrich the lives of children and families for 34 years now. Started my career at probation, and the Network for Children was formed in 1992, and it was about 1993 that I came over to the Network for Children doing some community mobilization stuff. Very different than my past world, but exciting in the same because network was very new, and we were just beginning to kind of form who we were. And I'm happy to say we're celebrating 30 years.
And your current role is as executive director, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. How long have you been in that position?
I've been in that position since 2004.
Okay.
So quite a while.
That is quite a while. What would you say is the mission of the Kern County Network for Children?
It's real simple. It's to protect and enrich the lives of children and families in Kern County. And there's no better job than getting up every morning and being able to advocate for kids and their families to make sure that they're safe, healthy, educated, and hopefully moving forward in their lives in a positive direction.
How does the mission tie into the role of education and the part that the Kern County Superintendent of Schools plays in a child's educational development?
Just a little background to get to that point. It was in 1991, the Children's Now, which is an advocacy group for children, released a report. And Kern County did not fare well in that report as far as outcomes for kids and families. It was the superintendent of schools at the time, Kelly Blanton, that looked at this report and said, I've got to do something. And this was somebody that grew up in poverty. So he knew poverty. He knew that these bad outcomes were bad for kids getting educated. If a kid went to school with an empty belly or spent all night under the bed because of domestic violence, they weren't going to learn. So Kelly picked up the phone and called the director at the time, a guy by the name of Don Dudley of Department of Human Services, and said, Don, we need to do something together to ensure we're doing everything and have every tool in the toolbox to ensure the safety of our kids and make sure they're able to come to school and learn. So they contacted then the CAO, the County Administrative Officer, Joe Drew, at the county, and they got together and they said, we need to form a group with the brain trust of all the agencies and organizations, public, private, and otherwise, that serve children and families. And so they brought together county department agency heads, people from the private sector, education together, and they began to form the Network for Children, which became in existence in 1992 and a full nonprofit in 1993. Kelly's belief was there was a way to integrate service, reduce duplication of service, and make those services available at school sites, which was unique. We do it naturally now as a county. Collaboration happens naturally. We see schools as a vehicle of serving our kids holistically. So they are able to learn when they come into the class. And if there's things going on in the home, how can we provide the support they need to make sure that young Bob can come to school with a full belly and ready to learn and not dealing with the stressors at home? So there's this real kind of a connection with schools and education, especially the superintendent of schools. Our office is unique in that we look at our community as a whole in different varieties. I mean, CISC is an example of that. And Kelly was one that was thinking out of the box, and he was a true entrepreneur willing to take chances. And it wasn't easy in the beginning bringing people together, because there were, for instance, agencies and organizations that felt like schools were getting into their business. Why would I want to outstation my staff at a school site? And also some of the schools, why would I want to outstation a social worker or a case manager or somebody from public health at my school site? So it took many years of convincing, a lot of meetings before everybody was willing to play in the sandbox. But today it's our culture in Kern County. You go to other counties where the superintendent has never met the chief of probation and never had met the director of behavioral health, but that's not the case in Kern County.
So, Tom, someone who is eligible for services through the Kern County Network for Children, is that starting at age 6 months? Is that starting at age five? Who is eligible for these services?
We do a variety of things. One of our biggest programs is called Differential Response. And Differential Response provides case management, voluntary case management, to families that have been referred to Child Protective Services. But Child Protective Services deem that it's not necessary for their intervention. But there's something going on in the home. It may be they're dealing with poverty and they don't have enough food in the home. They don't have enough beds for the kids. And it's more effective to work with that family and strengthen them than to put a kid in the system. That program is available to anybody that's referred to CPS, and whether they are, you know, age one, zero, to however, and they serve the whole family. We served about 7,000 kids last year alone through Differential Response countywide. And Differential Response is interesting because we go out to RFP and we have contract providers, and some of those contract providers are school districts. For instance, the Richland School District is our contract provider in Northern Kern for Differential Response. But they not only serve Shafter, they serve Buttonwillow, McFarland, Delano, that whole geographic area. So it's kind of out of the box for districts to do. Another one is Kernville, the Kern River Valley. Schools have been instrumental in our FRCs up there. The other piece to us that I think is one that a lot of people know us by now more than anything is our Dream Center. Back in 2007, Superintendent Larry Ryder came to myself and my board and said, I've got a program it's a Department of Ed program called Foster Youth Services, and it's made to advocate for educational rights of foster youth. But he didn't feel like it was doing enough. And so he knew by moving the program out of the superintendent of schools office under the umbrella of the Network for Children, we could do things differently and out of the box because of our nonprofit status, as well as our ability to blend county dollars, nonprofit dollars, as well as education dollars. And the one thing I have been educated on most of my career is how to prevent child abuse and neglect. And we also help with the child death review team. So I've been on the end of the spectrum of a kid getting referred and if a kid dies. But I didn't have a lot of experience or knowledge with foster youth. And I really thought kids in foster care were being just cared lovingly by everyone. And I didn't understand that there were glitches in the system. And I quickly learned that there was more to it than just advocating for a kid. We needed to wrap around our youth. And one of the things that we did early on with the Network for Children is create these local community-based collaboratives. And there's currently 19 collaboratives out of there. And some of them have family resource centers where families can come in unannounced and ask for services, and they get a whole menu of services. So I said, why don't we do that for foster youth? And so the first Dream Center was created downtown. We renovated a building. We put in a working coffee shop as a job incubator. I got a business person that knew how to do that because we want to employ some of these kids. And we opened our doors, and I was able to get staff from other agencies outstationed there, from probation, behavioral health, Department of Human Services. And the goal was, when a youth came in, there was no wrong door. We were able to provide them with an array of services, including things like clothing, a meal. We started giving out snack bags because I realized our kids were coming in hungry, and some of them were heading off to school and they needed just a snack. Our doors were open to anybody that was in foster care, even if it was for one day. And our goal was to serve 200 youth per year. By the end of that year, we were serving 200 youth per month. We were overwhelmed with the need. And that's a duplicative count, but that just shows a lot of these youth needed a place to go to get resources and assistance. And we were at that location for quite a while, and then the owner of the building decided to sell the building. And so I thought the Dream Center was just going to be a dream. It was going to go away. That's when Chris Frazier and Mary Barlow, both when Chris was the superintendent and Mary associate, said, we're not going to let this go away. We want to find even more space for you where you can even expand more. And we were able to expand to two buildings downtown. One is more, we call it the Collaborative Center, where there's multiple agencies from different departments, Department of Human Services, Superintendent of Schools, Network for Children, Probation, Public Health, and others. There's a station there. And then the Resource Center side, we have some of those same agencies, but that site is open to the youth to walk in at any point in time that they need something. We provide showers, we provide laundry service, computers to do homework, homework assistance, linkage to educational services. We have people that help with job development. There's a clothing bank, there's emergency food, emergency hygiene. So there's just a variety of things that happen out of the Dream Center, and it's for any youth that's been in foster care for one day. We've also, out of need and necessity, we've realized we needed to expand our population. And several months ago, my board gave us permission to start serving homeless youth as well. And our population, the age range that we mainly see at the Dream Center runs from about 16 to 24. At 25, they're no longer eligible for our services. And a lot of these older youth that come in, they were in foster care. They knew nothing more than foster care or group home care. And they emancipate, and they weren't prepared for that emancipation. And they lacked either the life skills or some of the other things they needed to be independent. And so we began to see more and more of our youth homeless. So we knew we needed to head in that direction. And so now we also provide homeless assistance as well as housing assistance. We have a creative program with the Veterans Assistance Foundation of Kern County. They have some low barrier shelters. So we have a youth come in that's homeless, that is interested in getting a stable living environment. We're able to put them in that shelter, which gives us time to triage whatever immediate needs they have, but then also try to help them with housing, help them with getting enrolled in school or finding a job or whatever direction they may go. And a lot of our older youth are also parenting, so it means their children as well. So the Dream Center is for me was an exciting change in my career because I gotten away from direct service for a long time. So I've made sure that my office was put in that resource center so I can be a part of the mix with the kids. So it's been a really fun experience.
I wanted to backtrack just on a question. You mentioned, for example, the Richland School District is a contract provider. So explain to me a little bit for our listeners, what is a contract provider? What do they do?
Okay, well, the dollars for child abuse prevention come into Kern County from a variety of sources, federal, state, and local. We're the body that oversees those dollars, and my board serves as the Child Abuse Prevention Council. We found what we think is a really good model for serving families that are in need. And that model is differential response. And what we do every 5 years is we go out to something called an RFP, which is basically an application, competitive application process to be the person to provide these differential response programs in a geographic area. And that RFP process is competitive, and we have multiple people competing for it. And Richland happened to be the recipient of the award the previous RFP period. And so they actually, as a contract provider, are providing the direct service. So we provide the funding, we provide technical oversight and support and linkage to other agencies and organizations. We provide them with whatever they need as far as them to be successful in implementing the program. And the Richland staff are the ones that are actually out in the field, knocking on the doors, case managing these families. And they report their outcomes back to us. And we report those both to my board and the County of Kern and the State of California. We have several school districts. Kernville is another school district, and they do the Kern Valley area. And so we found that for a lot of people, schools are a comfortable place to go with kids. And it's a comfortable place to ask for help. And it's also a place where we have teachers and other staff that have eyes and ears on these kids. And that's important. And a lot of times, those referrals to Child Protective Services come from educators. We saw a huge decline in the number of referrals to Child Protective Services during COVID when people were at home. And it was scary because most of the referrals were coming from law enforcement, meaning a law enforcement had a knock on the door, meaning something bad already happened. The goal what we're trying to do, and a CPS referral is not necessarily a bad thing. It's basically saying this family needs some help. And the majority of our families that accept services are very successful, getting linked to mental health services, substance abuse services, getting linked to jobs or other health care needs the kids have. And we've had great success with it. And since we've implemented Foley County-wide differential response, utilizing these contract providers that are providing the direct service, we've seen a continued decrease in substantiated abuse since 2008 in Kern County, which is something we're really proud of. And even when we've had the Department of Human Services pull data to see how many of our people that completed their case plan got re-referred, that number is very, very low. So we know we've had some success, and I appreciate all those people that are willing to be the ones knocking on the door. It's a tough job.
Absolutely. In some of the material I reviewed, Tom, I've read that an estimated 30% of children in Kern County lived below the poverty line in 2017. This is significantly above the state average. What are some of the reasons for this unsettling fact?
I think there's multiple reasons. We know in Kern County generational poverty exists. It's handed down from one generation to the next. It's kind of their norm. And so we've done things in Kern County collectively with other organizations and agencies to look at generational poverty and try to break those cycles when we identify them in families. Some of the families that we see that are living below the poverty line, it has to do with affordability of housing and rent in Kern County. It's extremely expensive. And also the wages. A lot of our jobs in Kern County are not paying the kinds of wages you would see other places. And you see that throughout the valley, especially those working in the ag community and others. It's not a living wage. We also know that people of color are more likely to live in poverty in Kern County, and we see that sometimes generationally. We know that we have a higher dropout rate than the state of California, although we've been improving that dropout rate greatly, which has been exciting. Kudos to Kern High and others. But there's other factored in, things like substance abuse and some of those things. But you have to realize the federal poverty rate is a family of four living below $27,000 a year. That's not a lot. But again, when we have a lot of people, especially that are migrant or maybe undocumented, they're not getting a living wage. And that's where we see a lot of it. But we've made some progress. We actually saw before the pandemic, we saw an increase in jobs, people being employed, and again, people graduating from high school. And it's, COVID's kind of put that on the back burner for now, but we're confident that if we continue to work as a community as a whole, we can change that, because no longer do organizations like myself or the Department of Human Services or Behavioral Health or school districts ignore poverty. We're trying to actively address it and figure out ways that we can lower that poverty rate in Kern County.
What are some of the factors involved that lead to homelessness amongst our county's youth? I'm sure there are many, but could you highlight just a couple?
Yeah, the highest percentage of kids becoming homeless are ones that have been in foster care. So a lot of times we see those youth emancipate from foster care, meaning reaching a certain age where they no longer receive service or direct aid, and they just don't have the life skills and haven't figured out how to be independent because no one taught them to be independent. I can't tell you how many times kids have surprised me with things they don't know. I remember we were successful in housing one of our youth with her two kids. She was excited to have her first apartment. We'd gotten her, helped her get a job, and we're wrapping services around her. We had our refrigerator delivered. And she honestly said, "Where do I get the food?" Because she grew up in a group home all of her life, and food was just always in the refrigerator. So some of those youth struggle. We also see a lot of our homeless youth that are dealing with substance abuse and mental health issues. And so our goal always is to try to address those issues first, but get them stabilized. We see other youth that are coming, leaving their homes purposely because they're in homes that there's domestic violence or abuse and other things. And so they choose to be on the street. We do, We have seen an increase during COVID with our homeless youth. When the first shutdown stopped, we literally had, in that first week, three youth dropped off by their foster parents. The youth had turned 18, and the foster parents said, "We're done," and literally dropped them off with bags and big buckets of their clothing. I think as a county, homelessness is a big issue. And if we can do things on the front end to prevent those youth becoming homeless to where they get in a spiral that's hard to get out of, we need to. And I think that's why there's been a bigger focus now on youth by both the county, the city, as well as organizations as ourselves. A kid that's in school also has the advantage of something called McKinney-Vento through the school districts. McKinney-Vento is a education program that provides support to youth that are homeless in schools. And schools have a different definition through Minnekental of what homelessness is. So a kid in McKinney-Vento can be considered homeless that's living in a hotel. The federal definition is different. You have to literally be living in the street or in your car. But McKinney-Vento provides funding for educational liaisons in every school. So if a student and their family are identified as homeless, and it could be the whole family, then there's resources they get linked to, hopefully, to get them in a stable environment. And that's been something that's been very important, I think, for educators to have as a tool when they identify a kid that is homeless. And the superintendent of the school's office actually helps oversee and provide educational support and other things through our superintendent of schools, McKinney-Vento. I'm sorry, I'm stumbling on that word, liaison.
Tom, it might help our listeners to get a grasp of the breadth of this problem. If you had to put a figure on the number of homeless youth that your agency deals with at any given time here in Kern County, could you put an estimate on that?
Sure. There are actually the Kern County Homeless Collaborative, there's a list where youth are identified as homeless. I believe that list right now is approximately about 200 youth that are considered homeless. And by youth, I mean between the ages of, below the ages of 21. So that's a lot. We also know that there has been an extension of some of the subsidies of emancipated foster youth. Usually when they turn 21, those subsidies stopped. But during COVID, they've continued, and they've just recently stopped those extra, basically an extra check that the kids were getting every month in December. We've identified 125 additional youth that currently have no plan when their money runs out and they have to move out of where they're at currently. So we've been trying to get on the front end of that with both the Department of Human Services and Kern County Probation to identify those youth and say, hey, listen, the free ride is stopping now. So we need a plan. So we are expecting to see a slight spike in homelessness in February with our youth. And we're trying to be proactive about making sure that we have the resources and the beds and the services we need to meet that need when it comes.
I was going to ask you, Tom, is there anything that has evolved within you since your experience from the start of dealing with disadvantaged peoples in Kern County through the agency to now that has surprised you or enlightened you in some way that has may provide some insight to our listeners as to the origin and core problem for disadvantaged peoples in Kern County? Have you gained any insight?
I think the one thing I know is we need compassion. We need understanding. People need second chances. Kids are resilient. Families are resilient. I've seen people come back from extreme addiction, people with mental illness that have been able to lead productive and healthy lives. I've learned that every kid needs to be loved. And I've also learned that poverty doesn't necessarily mean you're living in a bad home. Some of the worst cases I've seen, whether it be in child death review or through CPS or foster kids that have come in, have come from very well-off families. Poverty doesn't equal misery. Some of the most loving homes I've been in, some of the most caring homes and families that I've been in are in areas we would consider poverty-ridden. But it's not about the money. It's about the love, and it's about the compassion and caring for each other. And people want to do the right thing. They may not always do the right thing, but we got to give them the opportunity to do the right thing. And don't judge people because of where they come from or what their economic status is. We're all human, and we need to care for each other.
So, Tom, my final question is, how can we help as a community, as an individual? How can Bob Kretzmer help the current community?
The first thing I tell people, if they're parents or their aunts or uncles, take care of your kids. Love them. It's interesting that I live in a middle-class neighborhood, and I notice how often I see parents gone and kids left home alone. So I think the first thing I tell people is take care of your own family. You know, love your own kids. Don't put things in front of them like career or other things. They're important. The other thing is, if, for instance, in the child abuse world, if you suspect something, say something. Anyone can report suspected. It doesn't have to have evidence, just suspected abuse or neglect to Child Protective Services. And there's a hotline they can call, and they can find it on their website. The other thing is, you know, at the Dream Center, we accept donations. We're a 501(c) nonprofit. So if you have some gently used clothing or clothing that you can't use anymore, or you bought a case of cup of noodles at Costco and they're just sitting on the shelf, we'll take the donation. We don't take big things like couches and chairs and stuff, but we do. If you're an employer and you want an opportunity maybe to employ some youth that may be a little bit prickly at first, we have employers that work with us that try to hire our youth, knowing that they may come with a little baggage, but they're also going to come with support from us. So there's a lot of different ways, but I think the first thing is be a good human being. And we can all do better, but this is our community and we need to take ownership of it. I was raised to be a public servant. And I think the more we can instill that we're all in one form or another, no matter what your job, you can be a public servant. You can help, whether it's the Network for Children or the Salvation Army or, you know, Valley Children's Hospital, whatever it may be, there are a lot of organizations out there that can use support in many different ways. Get involved.
Well, Tom, I certainly wanted to give you an opportunity to share anything else that might be important to know about the Kern County Network for Children. We've covered a lot of ground, but if I missed something or you didn't have an opportunity to share some other important information, is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I think before coming here, I thought about you know, what role education has really played with the Network for Children and all the variety of programs and initiatives we've done. And one of the, probably the key player in all of this has been educators at many different levels, whether it be a school principal saying, yeah, we can do a community event here, or we'll be involved in the local community collaborative and make sure that we have parents there at the table to give a voice and to tell us what we really need. Or it's been the teachers that have been actively involved in helping shape, you know, our direction and what we do, or keeping those eyes on those kids. So education has been critical to the health and our ability to better serve and advocate for kids in Kern County. And I would say that education is right in line with our mission, and that's really to protect and enrich the lives of these kids and make sure they have the ability to learn so they can be successful and they can break that cycle of generational poverty, or they can be resilient even if they are in foster care. We have some amazing kids with amazing stories that you would just shake your head and think, how did they do that? Because they're resilient and because someone cared about them. And you talk to these kids and they always talk about their teacher, their favorite teacher. So I appreciate those in education and what you do, and I respect that.
Well, Tom, this has been a terrific session. Appreciate your coming in. Kern County Network for Children does amazing things, and I can see how everyone in the agency would be inspired by the efforts you make. And on behalf of Self-Insured Schools of California, I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you, Bob, and I appreciate the opportunity you've given me today.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the CISC podcast and greatly appreciate you listening to our show. Please check the CISC property and liability website at cisc.kern.org for a complete listing of podcast topics under the property and liability tab. Until next time, stay safe as we continue with the CISC mission of schools helping schools.
Production facilities for the CIS podcast are provided by KETN, a service of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools.